Welcome to the MedTech Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent in regulatory affairs, quality, clinical, engineering, R&D, and other areas for medical device, digital health, diagnostics, and other organizations across the U.S. life sciences sector. Here's your host, Mitch Robbins.
All right, welcome back to another episode here on the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Robbins, the founder and managing director here at the Anthony Michael Group, building companies and careers across the industry. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting down with Ms. Erica Logan. Erica is the Director of Talent Acquisition at Sequel MedTech. Now, before we get into Sequel MedTech and Erica's background, just real quick, she's been in the staffing and recruiting business since 2006, which was shortly after she came out of school in 2004. And I'm anxious to learn more about how she got into this crazy business that we call recruiting. But she's held positions in corporate recruiting leadership with companies like Vericel and Pear Therapeutics before joining Sequel MedTech in 2023. She's worked on the dark side, as we like to say sometimes, or as talent acquisition leaders say, in the third-party side with a staffing firm as well. But for those unfamiliar with Sequel MedTech, Sequel MedTech is developing the next generation of transformative drug delivery advancements in the diabetes space. The company's Twist AID system will replace the burden of daily injections with automated, accurate delivery of insulin to help improve blood sugar control. So without further ado, Erica, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mitch. Thanks for having me.
You got it. I am excited for you to be here, and we're going to dig into a variety of talent topics today, but you got to help me here because I always joke and say nobody comes out of school saying they're going to be in recruiting, just like a lot of the roles for that matter in med tech. But tell us, if you would, you came out of school roughly around 2004. You got into staffing recruiting 2006. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And you're exactly right. I didn't exactly go to college to become a recruiter. It wasn't a role I knew about after graduating. I actually went to college with the thought that I was going to go to law school after and then become a lawyer. But then I interned at a couple of different law offices during the summers. And I'm so glad I did, because it showed me that what it's really like to be a lawyer is nothing like it is on Ally McBeal, which is what I thought going into college. It's not quite as glamorous, and I just couldn't really see myself doing that long term. So then when I graduated in 2004 with an art history degree, there weren't a ton of opportunities out there. So I actually moved from Cleveland to Boston, where I had some friends from college, and I just started temping because I, just to get my foot in the door somewhere. So that's where I learned about just the existence of staffing agencies and what they did. And then how I got into staffing myself was through college, sort of. So I went to my friend's bachelorette party, and her younger sister was there. And so we were hanging out, and she actually worked at Aerotech, a staffing agency, and she and I just hit it off. And by the end of the night, she was trying to recruit me to come work at Aerotech, and she just made it sound like a lot of fun, that, you just talk with people and help them get jobs, and that sounded good to me. So she got me an interview, and the rest is history.
So quotations around just talk with people and yes. Help them get a job, right?
It's just that simple, right?
Yeah. I kind of got chills when you were telling your story, because I have a very similar story. I went, I got into recruiting in 2009, but right around that time, I was thinking about going to law school, and I found a program. I actually got into the program. It was a joint JD MBA program. And before I decided to go through all the trials and tribulations of studying again and paying for law school, I thought, man, I think I want to at least see if I could vet this out to decide if this is really what I want to do. And so I went into a staffing agency to try and get a clerkship in a law office, which I didn't. But when I was there, I said, hey, my mom always said she thought I'd be a good recruiter. But in that case, she was thinking of campus recruiting. She didn't know what recruiting was. And I said to the lady who was helping me at the time, I said, what do you guys do? Like, can you tell me more? And she kept my information. And lo and behold, you know, there's more to the story, but I ended up coming to work for them about 6 months later. She called me back and the rest is history. But that's so funny because I was thinking about going to law school at the same time too.
Yeah, both are kind of the path for people who not sure what they want to do, but they really like talking. So
that's awesome. So fast forward, you know, you were in the third party world for a while. How did you end up leaving a third party agency to come and do corporate recruiting?
So I sort of had a step in between. So I was at Aerotech from 2006 to 2010. Obviously, during that time, there was a recession and just a lot of changes at the company. And it was just becoming more and more difficult to get placements. And it just really felt like my time there was coming to an end. So I actually saw a posting on Monster.com for a role at Pro Unlimited, which is like a vendor management solutions company. So they are on site at big companies and manage their contingent workforce program. So I thought that would be a great way to kind of get my foot in the door on the corporate side and really start to learn about how things work on that side while still being able to use, you know, all the skills that I had learned in the staffing world. So that ended up being a great fit for me too. My first stint with them was at National Grid, managing the contingent workers there. And then I quickly got an opportunity to go work on site at Novartis, which was really exciting for me because when I was at Aerotech, my focus in staffing was mostly in clinical research and scientific staffing. So being able to get back to that was a lot of fun. And then I got the opportunity to manage my own account at Cubist Pharmaceuticals. And so I did that for about a year and a half. And then at Cubist, things were slowing down as well. What I didn't know at the time was that Cubist was in the process of being sold to Merck. So obviously they weren't doing as much hiring. So I was just trying to put my feelers out there and figure out what I could do next. I happened to have lunch with one of my friends from Aerotech just to check in and see how things were going. I asked her, you know, if she knew about anything, maybe she had heard about from one of her clients or something. And so she went back to the office that day, talked about what I was looking for with her team. And someone on her team actually just had come from another meeting that morning saying, hey, actually, one of my clients is Astrum Biosciences at the time, who later became Vericel. They had just, they used to be part of Genzyme, and then Genzyme was sold to Sanofi. And then a couple of years later, Sanofi divested this division of the company. So they became their own freestanding organization. And so all of their HR department was actually in Michigan, and they didn't have anybody on site in the Cambridge area. So just a sort of a right place at the right time situation. I went in and interviewed with their manager, and that's how I made the move into corporate.
That's hilarious. So your friend, you worked at Aerotech, made some friends, and they ended up placing you.
Yeah,
a few years later. That's awesome. That's awesome. So TA has so many facets to it, right? You guys are hounded by all walks of life, internally, externally. And you have had the opportunity to be part of now at least three corporate entities, all at different places along the life cycle of kind of building the team. Because, you know, there's startup, there's rapid scale, there's kind of peak employee count, but kind of managing retention and managing, you know, the turnover that you do have. What do you think has been the most challenging? If you look across, you know, what you're doing right now compared to what you've done in the past, what do you think has been most challenging as a TA leader?
Oh, wow. I mean, there's certainly challenges at every organization. When I first started at Vericel, you know, that was a small unit of a very, very large company that all of a sudden just became their own freestanding company. So they were used to having, you know, corporate resources. You know, they never met their recruiters. They were in an office in New Jersey. every process that they had to follow was the corporate process, and those didn't necessarily translate to the needs of this very small kind of niche organization. So coming in there, you know, they had processes set up, but they weren't really working for them. So it was an opportunity to work with a lot of the big departments that did a lot of hiring to ask, you know, what was working for you, what wasn't, and let's design a process that will work for us where we are now. So it was a bit of a challenge trying to figure out, you know, what things do we want to keep and what things do we need to keep from just a FDA regulation perspective, and, you know, what do we want to design from scratch to best suit the needs for, you know, this group. So that was the first time I really had an opportunity to design a process from scratch in a collaborative way like that. And it was really something that definitely has served me now as I'm coming on board at Sequel, where, you know, we just started this company 18 months ago. I was the first HR person at all. So, you know, we really didn't have anything at all. So just going through that situation really helped me with where I am today.
And I got to imagine being the first person, especially from a talent perspective, there's so many things that you have to balance at the same time. And it's like, what tools should we use? How do we get candidates on board? How do I rein in, you know, hiring managers are, they've got umpteen hats that they're wearing right now, but they've got to make time to interview these people. Like, talk through that if you would. Like, what have you done for those who are listening right now who maybe are either aspiring to be able to build something from scratch one day, or they're currently in the process right now and they're super overwhelmed? But talk through maybe some of the things that you've had to work through that you have put in place that are helping.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I was fortunate in the way that, you know, the company is new. And so the most important thing that people needed was more people. So, you know, I was coming from a place of, I don't want to say power, but it was certainly a role that was respected because it was so critical to the organization. So in that way, I think, you know, it can be different in different organizations if your company has different priorities. But just because I was coming in right at the beginning where staffing was one of the most important things, that did make prioritizing it a little bit easier. I also really thought hard about, you know, what had worked for me at other companies and what hadn't. And when you're in a startup environment, I think what people like best about it is you're able to move really quickly and not have a lot of red tape. So I wanted to set up a process that matched that vibe, while also retaining the bits of red tape that are critical, you know, things like compliance and, you know, making sure we're giving everybody an equitable opportunity to come join the company, you know, that we're doing compliant background checks and not checking too many things like that. So just being able to hone in on what's most important and really weeding out the rest so that we can bring people on quickly. I think that is what allowed me to be successful and for us to hire people really quickly.
What I like about what you said there is that you talked about leaning on previous experience that you've had in other companies to kind of help you. But at the same time, you didn't try to implement so many things that you thought would be great quickly. You kind of looked at what is the greatest need that we have right now. The greatest need is throw everything out and let's get some people on board. That's what we need right now. Process and maybe smoothing things out and having a little bit more finesse to what we do will come. But right now, let's be scrappy, just like a startup needs. And you know what? The other thing too is, as I think through the timeline, you actually did, as a talent person, you actually came on board very quickly, because most organizations kind of use the founders and the core leadership team at first to recruit some people and then bring on a talent person. So they actually did something probably to their credit really great as far as being able to delegate that to you.
Yes, and I do think that's exactly what happened. So Alan Lotvin is our CEO. It's my understanding that the very first person he hired was Beth Kite, who is our head of the whole commercial team, so both market access and sales. And it just so happened that she and I had just worked together at Pear Therapeutics. So she knew me. And then, you know, Alan hired, I think 8 or 9 of the other, you know, VPs and executives through his network. But then between Beth and Alan, that was, they're like, well, that's everyone we know. So we need probably 100 more people to get this show on the road. So, you know, understandably, you know, at that early stage, when I started talking to Beth about opportunities at Sequel, the company was literally founded on June 1st, and she and I started talking maybe 3 weeks later. So it was very much the infant stages. The company did not yet have a name, let alone a website. We had a building where the office probably was going to be. And so obviously, you know, not a lot of known entities or any, it was very, very, very new. So we just talked about like a part-time contract opportunity. And just hearing, you know, I did need a full-time job ultimately, but just hearing about the brilliant people who were starting this company and just knowing you don't get opportunities like this every day to come in from the very beginning and build the department exactly how you want it. So I said, you know, I don't really care what you call yourselves or how you want to pay me. I'm on board. This is so cool. So yeah, I did start as a part-time contractor, but in our first month, you know, as we sort of figured out how long things were going to take and what was really needed, Alan saw that there, you know, this was a full-time need. And so he brought me on. Originally, I was brought on as director of HR. So it was a very casual conversation. It was very funny. He's just said, hey, you're doing a great job. I'd love to bring you on full time. I'm thinking director of HR. So just like if we have any other HR stuff that needs to get done, you can do that too. And I just said, okay. So,
yeah. And now it's transitioned though more to your over talent specifically. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. But cool. Cool opportunity though, because I'm sure you did do some of the foundational HR stuff that maybe you weren't exposed to as much in your corporate recruiting roles prior. Is that right?
Yeah, that's for sure. So we did have a PEO. So they, you know, manage our benefits and payroll, but, you know, I hadn't even really done much with, HRIS systems before. I had had some exposure. But this was my first time really doing onboarding in those systems. And then, you know, We actually had to go through open enrollment in October of that year. So like a month after I started, I was working with the CEO and the PEO to select the benefits for our benefits program. That was definitely not something I've done before. I selected our 401k vendor and implemented a 401k. So I definitely got exposure and experiences that I had never had before, and I think are just very unique to be able to do that.
For sure, 100%. So I want to steer our conversation to 2024 right now. Here we are as the time of this recording. We're almost in the middle of December, and it's been a crazy year employment-wise. You know, in our space, more layoffs than I've seen probably since I've been in this space. TA leaders bombarded with applications all over the place. And, you know, LinkedIn is a funky thing in the sense that you see these job postings and it says 300 applications or whatever or within a few minutes. And then you hear from the TA say, no, that's not really true. We're not getting that much. Or if we do, they're not all qualified. So I want to talk about real time. Experience that you're having yourself, and then perhaps advice for those who are in job seeking mode who listen to this back. So first and foremost, you've got a variety of postings for jobs that you guys are working on too. Is it like that in your world? Are you getting a gazillion applications for each requisition that you have open?
Well, the short answer is no, we're certainly not. So right now, the majority of the postings that we have are for field roles. So they're for a specific region. I think that helps, you know, so people know that, you know, for this territory, we're only hiring people from, you know, within 50 miles of Duluth or wherever it is. So for those types of roles, we're not getting bombarded at all. I mean, we're getting a healthy number of applicants. And I think LinkedIn is absolutely pushing our jobs out to the exact right people, because we're getting applicants who are in the diabetes space for the most part. There are the, you know, whenever we have like an IT or marketing role that says it's remote, yes, we're getting absolutely bombarded with applications. But I will say, you know, for the time being, we're not using AI to screen through resumes. For 90% of our roles, the hiring managers are going into the rec and truly looking at every applicant. You know, they have an understanding of the industry and what we're looking for. So, you know, they're making the decisions on who we're speaking with. And then, you know, the team is also doing, you know, external outreach. So I would say, you know, if you see a role and it's perfect for you, apply as soon as you possibly can. And, you know, make sure your resume is tailored for the role. You know, if, you know, for our company, since we're launching in the diabetes space, for most of our roles, we're requiring that therapeutic area experience. So just making sure that's your resume screams that. I know that people a lot of times give the advice that you should reach out to the hiring manager or the recruiter on LinkedIn. I do think that's a great idea, but if you're reaching out to me through LinkedIn and telling me that you're a perfect fit for the role and you don't meet the minimum qualifications for the role, then that is frustrating to me, because you're just not, you know, some roles there's qualifications, and we're very deliberate when we're developing our job descriptions to make sure we're not asking for anything more than what we need. From the beginning, I made a push so that, you know, we're not requiring a college degree if it's really not a requirement for the role. But if, you know, we are a regulated industry and we are launching really quickly, so there is some experience that you just need to have. So I would say, if, you know, if you are a perfect fit for a role, and you really want to make sure the recruiter sees your resume, it's great to reach out to them through LinkedIn. Make sure you apply to the job first, because again, you know, a lot of times we can only consider people who have applied for, you know, lots of different compliance reasons. And then if you can put in that blurb what makes you a great fit in one or two sentences, those are the messages I pay attention to, and those are the messages that I forward through to the hiring manager.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear, you know, from the horse's mouth, kind of what goes through your mind, what you're looking for, what you see. And one of the biggest frustrations I have too is people complain about not finding work or not getting callbacks or not getting any response. But you also got to be careful as to what you're applying to. I can't tell you the amount of people that reach out to me and say, hey, I saw this position that you made a LinkedIn post about. I'm blah, blah, blah. It's like, has nothing to do with it. So why would you spend my time talking to you when you didn't have a courtesy, the respect, I guess, up front to realize, like, this is not even my wheelhouse. So why don't you focus on what you do best and add as much value as you possibly can within that space? So I love that. What you mentioned AI, hey, we're not using AI right now. AI is coming for all of us. And I think in a way, in a good, you know, it's scary because the rate that it's evolving is unbelievable. And I always say, do I think it's going to replace tasks and perhaps responsibilities? Yes. But do I think it's going to create alternative jobs and have people who can harness the power of AI be well off? Absolutely. So what's your perspective as to what's going on with AI in our space in talent acquisition?
Yeah, and thanks for giving me an opportunity to clarify what I just said. So I'm not using, and my team is not using AI to screen candidates out. But do we use AI for other things? Absolutely. Like if you're not using ChatGPT to write your job descriptions, I don't know what you're doing with your life, because that is a great use of your time. We're also looking at a couple of AI tools to use as, you know, note taking during our conversations with candidates. So I think there's certainly opportunities to use AI, like you said, to make our jobs easier so that we can focus on the human aspects of our job. I think the most important thing that a recruiter can do is have that initial conversation with the candidate, not only to figure out if the candidate is a good fit for the role, but the part that people don't talk about as much is, you know, how much we're selling the role to the candidate and making connections in the conversation to help the candidate see, you know, how their experience makes them a good fit for the role and how what they're looking for in a company is what you'll find here. You know, AI can't do that for you. And people do really want that human connection. They want to talk to somebody who's so excited and so passionate about where they work and what they do, and can really see in you what makes you tick and how that would really be fostered and enhanced at your new company.
I almost want to go like this, because it's true. It's true. The power of the human connection, but the goal that you just shared is that it's a two-way street, right? There's got to be a value proposition to an organization as to why somebody should stop dead in their tracks and see this as at least a no-brainer to not only have an exploratory conversation, but to hopefully learn more, because what they've heard is intriguing enough to realize, hey, doing this same job here compared to down the street is different. And I think it's especially in down markets, companies overlook that. But please realize that if even in down markets, there's still people who are gainfully employed, who are knocking the cover off the ball, who could be a huge asset to your organization if they came work for you versus elsewhere. And those who are unemployed, their most important priority is to land a job. So that means that you already have competition, because they're trying to interview with as many companies as they can in the space. So it's just as important. And I'm not talking about necessarily SQL MedTech, I'm talking about in the course of your career. How do you convey that, the importance of that piece, to your hiring teams? Because I don't think oftentimes they necessarily stop to realize or understand that.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's really just as simple as talking about that in my initial, you know, rec kickoff conversation. I always have a scheduled rec kickoff, even if it's a role that we've filled before or with a hiring manager who has done a lot of hiring, because, you know, to your point, the market is always changing, and they rely on us to tell them, you know, what it's really like out there, and how they need to handle the search. So I think the phrase time kills all deals is something that we use amongst our team and not really with hiring managers, but that's the basic message, is that, for the right people, we are selling our company and the role as much as they are selling themselves to us. And so the candidate experience is really paramount from the beginning to the end. And here's what's going to make us successful. It's having a very clear outline of what the interview process is going to look like, having impeccable communication with the candidate. And what I really try to focus in on in that intro meeting is all of the decision points in the process and how are we making those decisions and what's the time frame for those, who's in charge of that, and who's driving that. Because every little decision point is an opportunity for a clog in the process. And that's when candidates get frustrated, and that's when the hiring process loses steam. So just making sure those things are all decided up front is really what has greased the wheels for me and allows the hiring manager to understand that, what's really important in the process and how we're going to get our goals met at the end.
Have you ever worked with a process where the hiring manager, or the hiring team for that matter, wanted, you know, umpteen steps in the process? They got to have an intake call, and then they got to do this test, and then they got to meet with the four of them. And then if they meet with the four of them, then they got to meet with so-and-so. Have you ever had that where it's just like, this doesn't make any sense?
Oh yeah, of course. I advise and I explain, you know, why this isn't going to work. I do sort of have a feeling that, you know, it's their rec and they need to be comfortable with the process. So I do advise on best practices, and I do sort of feel like, in a way, if we just do their bad process and they see that it's bad, then they'll be more willing to fix it.
People change when the pain is great enough, right?
Yeah. And it's like, oh gosh, everyone's canceling their interviews and we've had three people drop out, because then I have the data to show them of, you know, what's happened and what's not working. I don't like to do it that way, but That has happened. Yes.
The more I host these episodes with especially on the TA side, mm-hmm. the more I want to preach just the importance of the talent acquisition professional's responsibility to coach the hiring team, because they were all once candidates as well. But just mm-hmm. because they were candidates and just because they have a hire to make doesn't mean that they're professional hiring. I don't know how to say it. Basically, they're professional hiring teams, right? They have a need, which is to hire somebody, but the way that they do it doesn't necessarily mean they've got, you know, a PhD in how to do it. And so I think for people who hire so many people in the organization, it's your responsibility to coach them in the best interest of themselves and the organization and the candidate. And I think having that trust in place and really building it based on delivering results and backing yourself up with data, like you said, is paramount.
I totally agree. Yeah. And to that point too is, you know, folks who are doing a lot of hiring, they have an outsized influence on the marketplace and what people outside of the company think about our company. Especially at a new company where, you know, most of the people who have heard of SQL for the first 6 months that we were around probably heard about the company because they saw a job ad or they applied to a job here or somebody they know got a job here. So that's a huge responsibility that the TA team has. Is like, you know, we are really the stewards of our company's reputation. And if all people know about our company is that I have to talk to 18 different people to get my foot in the door there, and I had no idea what was going on half the time, then everyone just thinks we're disorganized and we don't know what we're doing. And maybe this isn't going to be such a successful company. But if you have a tight process from the beginning and the candidate experiences what they were told they were going to upfront, and we make decisions quickly, that shows the candidate that, you know, even if they don't get a job, that we know what we're doing and we're a company that operates with, you know, integrity and standards. And I don't think people really think about that part of it. And that has come into some of my coaching conversations is, you know, we don't need this to be a perfect candidate experience just to be nice and to hopefully hire the best person. It's really important to do that so that we're maintaining our good standing in, you know, the broader atmosphere.
I love that, because I always say people talking positively or people talking negatively, or is people talking, which one do you want them to talk? Which direction mm-hmm. do you want them to go, right? Because they're going to speak one way or the other depending on their experience. And I think that this candidate experience thing, it kind of gets on my nerves a little bit, because it can be almost a buzz phrase versus like actually taking action about it. Like, oh, we want a good candidate experience. And very similar to DE&I, honestly, a few years ago, even. And I say that with respect. I think it's an important topic, but it's a matter of, are we talking or are we actually taking action to do some things internally? So with that said, and this is probably where we're going to wrap, I could tell that you're very passionate about a candidate experience and that you are doing something about it. What is there one or two pieces of advice that you can give maybe to somebody who's listening right now, who's kind of cowering a little bit because they know it's important, but they're frustrated because they see what's happening in their own organization. Do you have one or two pieces of advice as to perhaps things that they can either implement straight away or advice on how to have that conversation internally?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you're in a situation where it's a very fixed process and you feel like you don't have a lot of control over what you can change, what I would most focus on is that initial candidate conversation and really just setting the tone and making sure the candidate understands what the process is. Because even if the process is terrible, if they know what to expect, that provides the candidate a lot of comfort and security and will prevent them from, you know, needing to check in a lot. And it's just, people just want to know what to expect. So if you can set that up very clearly with how long is the process going to take, how many steps are going to be, where there might be changes in the process, how long in between steps they can expect, that's that is a huge impact on the candidate experience. And I think that's something that everybody can do. If you have a little bit more opportunity to take control of the process, the very first thing I would change is looking at your application process. It's like you said, a lot of people are out of work and applying for a lot of jobs. And it's very stressful to have to do that. And if it takes you half an hour to apply for a job on your website, that makes people feel not only frustrated and annoyed, but it makes it seem like, well, maybe you just have a lot of red tape as an organization, and maybe this is how it's going to be to actually work there. Is everything going to have 1,000 steps? And maybe I don't really want to do that. So if you can just have a very straightforward application process where you submit your resume, you maybe answer 2 or 3 specifically relevant questions, and then you can be on your way. And if you can apply on your phone, you've already set up a great candidate experience.
I love that. And I appreciate all the truth and just the kind of realness from you today, because like I said, yeah, you hear it all over all you got to do is go on LinkedIn. You see all these posts about terrible candidate experiences from the candidate side, and then companies preaching about how they care about candidates. So for you to come here and give some real actual items and speak truth from your perspective from both sides, I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's not rocket science. I think it's just finding a way to treat people the way they want to be treated, and, you know, just finding a way to make your experience reflect what it's really like to work at the company. And I do think that is what's made me successful here at Sequel is, you know, I'm not coming in with an agenda. I'm just trying to put together an experience that works really well for everybody. And I don't think that that's necessarily the experience that all hiring managers have had when they're working with people in HR. So I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Well, listen, I appreciate you being such a valued guest and the nuggets of gold that you shared today. If it's cool with you, on the show notes, we'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile as well as a link to Sequel, and encourage anybody who's interested in learning more to reach out.
That would be great. Thank you. I think we have about 150 openings on our careers page right now. So yes, we are hiring. Please check us out.
You heard it right there from the horse's mouth, guys. Sequel MedTech, Erica, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
It's been such a pleasure. Thanks, Mitch.
Thanks for listening to the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.